Hello, and welcome to Curtain Call Podcast, Episode 10. I am your host, Chuck Clay. And on this particular episode of Curtain Call Podcast, we are pleased to present a two-for-one episode. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Curtain Call Podcast, Episode 10 is a twofer. Ten 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 is a twofer. Say that 20 times fast. Ten is a twofer. Ten or 20 times fast. 10 is a 2 for 20 times fast. 10 is a 2 for 20 times... Gah. I digress. On this particular twofer, we are joined by Catherine Gray and Will Bigham, a wife and husband production team who recently launched their own production company in Los Angeles, Shamrock Motion Pictures. Catherine is a producer, writer, and actor, who has worked with the Actors Co-op Theater Company in Los Angeles, amongst others. Will is a filmmaker and director whose latest full-length feature film, The A-List, is currently available on iTunes and other VOD platforms. Please, if you're interested, take a look at our website. There will be links to that as well as to Shamrock Motion Pictures, so you can check out what Will and Kat are doing. Also, a big special thanks to friend of the podcast, Felicity Scott Fulford, for the recommendation. Felicity responded to a posting on our Facebook page and said, you know, Catherine Gray is a theater producer in LA. You might want to look her up. And I did, and Kat said yes. And so Carmen and I took a lovely trip on a Saturday afternoon to visit Will and Kat in their lovely home in the Los Angeles area. And we sat down, had a chat. Will was hanging around, and I said, hey, Will, why don't you get in on this business too? And he was nice enough to oblige. And so the four of us just sat around Will and Kat's dining room table, and we had a fantastic hour-long chat that you are about to hear. So before we go further, a quick word, which is to say that if you know somebody that you would like to hear on this podcast that live relatively close to the Los Angeles area, please give us a heads up. Visit us at curtaincallpodcast.com or on our Facebook page, on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Google+. There are myriad ways that you can contact us. Please send us a message. Give us a heads up. Hey, this person would be a great person to join you on the podcast, etc., etc. Because, quite frankly, the podcast called Chuck Talks to People That He Knows is going to run out of steam pretty soon. That being said, I've known Will and Kat for quite a long time. We went to college together. As a matter of fact, all four theater professionals that you're going to hear on this podcast graduated from Texas Tech University with one degree or other. So there's that. And a big shout out, word of thanks to the Texas Tech University Department of Theater and Dance. They are a fantastic institution of higher learning. That I am grateful for, that I know that Will and Kat are grateful for, my wife Carmen is grateful for it, and they continue to do great things for the community and for their students, so keep up the good work, Texas Tech. One last thing, folks, which is that now that we are on episode 10, we are rapidly nearing the end of one full year of podcasting. So hooray! On the other side of that, it's about the time that I'm gonna have to start asking for some money. I know what you're saying, but Chuck, this is a free podcast. We don't pay for it. I know. That is sort of the crux of the problem. You see, I don't get paid for this. As a matter of fact, I have to pay for it out of my own pocket most of the time. If you remember, I did do a crowdfunding campaign at the beginning to get this thing launched, I'm going to be doing another crowdfunding campaign coming up in the next couple of months to fund the second year of podcasting. So, with that being said, let me start the soft sell. Ladies and gentlemen, if you like what you hear on the Curtain Call podcast, if you think this is a thing that should be around, where you can sit and hear interesting conversations with working theater professionals, please think very seriously about giving whatever you can to the campaign once it's launched. Trust me, I will make it known on the podcast, through our various social media outlet, and of course through the website as well, once that campaign launches. But folks, I can't do it without your help. So please, dig deep, give what you can. We're going to have some fun perks, but of course, it's not really about the perks. It's about the podcast. So please, in the next couple of months, when you see the many, many Facebook postings and you hear me begging ad nauseum, do the right thing. Give me a few shekels. That's all I'm asking for. Thanks, guys. Enjoy episode 10 of the Curtain Call podcast. It's a twofer, featuring Catherine Gray and Will Bigham. Well, hello there, podcast listener. Didn't see you sitting there, sidled up, listening to a podcast the way you are. Well, welcome. This here is the Curtain Call podcast. It's theatrical. My name is Chuck Clay. I am the host. I'm an actor, writer, director, and a full-time stage enthusiast. Which is a fancy way of saying that I like the theater and theater people, which is why, for 1 hour every month, I sit down with a different theater professional to find out more about what they do and why they do it. So stick around, why don't you? This is Curtain Call Podcast, coming at you.
Have you been recording this whole time? Oh my god.
Wonderful.
He does this. He starts recording. He doesn't tell you.
And then you say something, you know, I don't know.
And then you're caught.
And you're like, ah! Yeah. So are you editing this later, or is it going to...
It'll get edited somewhat.
So if I say something stupid, you can edit it.
You can always be like, you know what, that thing that I said, let's
That's
cut
dumb.
That out.
Yeah.
We did actually have one, Miles, who is a colleague of mine, and... Chuck had a conversation with him, and he mentioned, he was talking about the Theater 99 business, and he mentioned a specific, you gotta
what
not
theater
say that
was
theater
it?
Name. Well, I don't even know, because I wasn't in the room when...
He was talking about a particular theater in Pasadena.
Pasadena Playhouse, maybe?
That is of a certain, has a large budget, a large operating
budget.
Okay,
all right, okay.
And he was basically saying that seemed unfair, that they would... intentionally choose to go under this 99 seat rule.
Just so that they didn't have to pay.
Was he pro the whole 99, getting rid of the 99 seat thing, or against?
It was, I don't know that he had decided his stance when I had spoken to him. He was definitely on the favor of actors getting paid.
You know what, me too, actually. Yeah. But my company is they're on the losing end, I guess, to speak. So it was a dilemma.
So let me actually go ahead and let's go ahead and jump into this thing from here, because I think this is a good jumping off point.
Sure.
Since we've found ourselves in this water already of this 99 seat business, Because it is a complicated issue. And the fact that, you know, on one hand, there's a very positive thing, which is that we do want actors to get paid and paid their worth.
Right.
On the other hand, it makes it very hard for some small companies to operate.
Correct.
So tell me a little bit, where does your company kind of fall on that? Not speaking unofficially for your
right.
company,
unofficially. Well, so I'm with a 99-seat theater company in Hollywood called Actors Co-op. And so I produce for them, and I've also been a manager for them as well in the office and run the box office for many years. And the big worry is that we would not survive. We were already struggling.
Right.
But we're a very well-known theater company and well-respected theater company. But the question was, we were going to have to pay actors more and it would severely deplete our resources and we wouldn't be able to make it.
Right.
I felt in my heart that that would never happen because we have such amazing supporters and such a great base of subscribers. I think they would have rallied and stepped up no matter what. I don't think we would close. I guess it's still up in the air because the 99-seat thing did pass.
Right.
And so the question is, we're still trying to figure out what it means for us because for the membership-based companies, there were a few things that some concessions they made.
Right, they did.
So we're still trying to figure that out.
Sort of have a lot of options for companies to sort of find what works for them. And I thought that was, while I know that people were still unhappy that there was a iron fist coming down saying you must implement this minimum wage, I did like the fact that they did seem to offer a lot of options for a lot of different size companies that, you know. So
yeah, they really did. I mean, on the other hand, I mean, I really am in favor, though, of actors getting paid. Because,
right.
I mean, I have done so much free theater out here, or basically free doesn't even cover my gas, because I love it, you know, because I love to do theater, and I try to do at least one thing a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do something that I'm excited about and that works with my schedule, so often it's free. But I always feel like, you know, we should be paying actors more. Actually, our company maybe should be standing up for the actors and saying, you know what, we think it's the right thing to do to pay actors what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it means we're going to close our doors. Sometimes I don't think we would ever close our doors, but sometimes I feel like if you take a stance like that, that it can be for your benefit. So I don't know.
What size, if you don't mind my asking, what size theater is the Actors Co-op?
Okay, so we have two spaces, two 99-seat theaters, and our company size is, well, it fluctuates, but there's probably about 50 members who are active, and then as far as members on leave, they are still considered members, but they just aren't active members. Oh, gosh, I don't even know. Hundreds, you know. It's been around since 1987, I think.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So
that's pretty good in this neighborhood. In my neighborhood, I mean Southern California.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
For sure. So how did you find yourself working with this group?
So Actors Co-op is, I'd heard about it. It's a group of, the thing that makes it different from other theaters in the Hollywood and this area is that all the actors are Christians.
Oh.
Now that doesn't mean that we do Christian shows like ever. We do very secular things, but that's the one thing that binds us together. It'd be like if, you know, there's some Jewish membership companies where everybody's Jewish, uh-huh. or, you know, other sort of companies like that. And I'd heard about it, and that stigma of Christian actors, I thought, I'm sure it is a horrible theater company. You know, I just knew it was bad. I was prejudging. And so finally, after we'd been here for like 5 years, I don't know, I'd heard some good things about it. I hadn't even seen a show. And I decided, well, okay, maybe I will audition. And I did, and got in, which was amazing, because many people don't get in on the first time when they audition. And anyway, and so it's just been such a blessing to be able to go to our meetings. And it's people who are like-minded as you are, that are striving in the business. And they have such a high standard for their shows, which I really appreciate. So I started out as an actor there. And then I became the office manager after that and worked in the box office and really loved that. I mean, it felt like I didn't make a ton of money, but it felt like, I was making a difference in our theater company and in the theater world in general. I felt like, it was just a really neat opportunity. And then after that, I started producing for them. So, I produced this year, I produced My Children, My Africa, which just closed a couple weeks ago.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So when working with that company and you're producing, do you take projects to the company or do they sort of decide a season and you then take something
on? That's a good question. So the way we work is we have a production company, and so those people are the producers. So if you get hired as a producer, then you're on the production company and you choose the season for the following year. So you bring in shows that you like, you champion shows that you like. Sometimes I guess it's something that you want to be in, but sometimes it's not. Often it's just, this is a story we need to tell. And I didn't bring My Children, My Africa, but my friend did, who was also on the production committee. But when I read it, I championed that show so much because it really has so much to say. It's so timely right now, and such a beautiful piece of theater. I don't know if you know
I'm
it very well.
With it.
It's by Athel Fugard.
I thought it was a Fugard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's about a teacher in South Africa during apartheid, and he has a black student, and then there's a white female student and a black male student, and they come together to work on this inter-school competition. And they become friends, and she kind of gets over some racism that she might have had, and he finds that, you know, that this white girl, that they actually really feel like they're connecting. And they form this wonderful friendship, but then, of course, apartheid happens.
Right.
And he has to make a choice. You know, he's identifying with the struggle, and so it kind of breaks their friendship up, and it brings up so many great questions. Like, it brings up questions of violence versus nonviolence, you know? When is nonviolence enough? You know, it brings up that question.
Mm-hmm.
It brings up questions of, you know, why can't we be friends if we're of different races? You know, who's telling you that we can't be friends? And so he has to struggle with that. Like, being a friend with her looks to the struggle, it looks like it's hurting the struggle. You know, so it's wonderful, wonderful themes in it. It's really great. So
that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're producing for the theater, what exactly does that entail? What do you do as a producer for the theater?
It's not as creative as some producers would be. It's pretty much, you know, you get your budget and you hire all of your designers and actors. You know, the director is usually already hired, but the production committee has a hand in who's hired. And then you create the space. What's awesome is when you're producing for a theater company is you don't have to go out and like rent your space. It's already there. You've already got your lights. You've got so much at your fingertips, which is awesome.
That is great.
And so basically that you make sure things are running well. You make sure everybody's communicating, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. So, obviously you and your husband Will met in school.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys start dating at in college?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We did. Yeah. You want to talk about that?
man, so many years ago, I don't remember that.
I know, that was like
where
years
did you guys,
ago.
Where did you meet?
We
met at Texas Tech.
Was it in a class or was it in rehearsal?
Oh, actually, no, my brother, who was a year above me.
We have two different stories on how we met, by the way. Go ahead.
Now, my brother, who was a year above me, had a crush on her. And they were in, I guess, Annie together or something like that. They were a production of Annie. And he invited her over to watch Star Trek or something. And so I met her, you know, watching Star Trek. And I wasn't a huge Star Trek fan, but, you know, she was and my brother was. So I thought she was pretty cute, but, you know, my brother had a crush on her. But then my brother transferred to University of Texas. And suddenly there's this cute girl that still wants to come over and watch Star Trek. And the rest is history, I guess.
That's right.
Star Trek gets them every time.
That's it.
That's right. That's right. I love Star Trek.
Chick Magnet.
Well, see, I actually met him earlier than that. Because
the truth
is that he was dating a girl when he came to Texas Tech. And she lived on my hall in the dorm. And she would like have guys over to her room like every day, like spending the night when they weren't supposed to spend the night. And I remember they were like breaking up at the time. And I remember meeting Will and he looked miserable, just miserable, poor guy.
So, and she fixed me.
And I fixed him.
Yay! Yeah. Yay for being fixed.
Yeah.
Not in the dog sense.
Oh, right.
No, yeah, no. Yeah, apparently not. We have two children.
Doing fine on that.
Yeah.
On that count. You also have an interesting story about your proposal.
Yes, that was interesting.
Yeah, tell me that story.
Well, we'd been dating, seriously, you know, but we had never mentioned the word marriage, ever. Never even said it. Never even said the word. And Will surprised me. And on stage at the end of Guys and Dolls, I'm dressed in a wedding dress because I'm Adelaide at the end. And it's like, the girl's only doing it for some dough. And then Will goes, stop the show. And I'm like, what is going on? And he runs down and says, Adelaide, Nathan doesn't want to marry you, because he was playing Benny South Street. I do. And I figured you're wearing a dress, wedding dress already. Catherine, will you marry me? And I was like, what? Anyway, of course I said yes. Uh-huh. And then later thought about it. Do I really want to say yes? And then I was like, there's no reason to not say yes. So we've been married for
almost 18 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Did anybody know you were going to do that?
Yeah, I had to get permission from the Department of Theater, and they loved it because it was promotion for the show, so yes. They brought in
free advertising.
Seriously, right?
Reporters, and it was even on Good Morning America the next day.
Wow, I got a very tougher time with you.
Really?
Well, I'm Fred's baby, Fred Christmas.
Uh-huh, sure.
I'm Fred's baby. Mm-hmm. Fred was very anti- him.
Oh, really?
Well, he wasn't necessarily anti-me.
Oh, yes, he was, darling.
Fred loves me, all right? Fred Crystal loves me.
He did. It only took us, I think, being married about 10 years for him to be okay with
me. He also just happened
that
to recognize
so
how much of a screw-up I was. Okay.
That is still so
Fred's
funny.
Baby. I'm still Fred's baby. But, so Fred has this general rule. He doesn't want any of his kids getting married.
Uh-huh. Really?
Because he knows it's a tough business. Mm-hmm, and he knows... Mm-hmm.
It really is.
He knows if you get married, then that's one shackle right there. If you start having kids, then that's...
Makes it hard.
More shackle. And it just makes it more difficult. And he just knows how tough the business is. Yeah. And he knows you have to be willing to move around and pick up your life and go where the opportunity and where the work is. And mm-hmm. so he was just concerned that I might slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I promise I'm not going to slow down.
Yeah.
And drag him with me.
Yeah, and it works out great. It worked out great.
And it worked out.
Yeah.
Jumping off from that, once you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. and, you know, you do have to go where there's work, where there's opportunities. How did that sort of direct your life, like in going to Virginia and then coming out here? Like, how did those sort of decisions get made?
We had an easy decision to make right after we graduated from Tech because we had a job available in Virginia at a theater, the Barter Theater, resident company.
Awesome.
Not resident company at the time. It was going to be the intern company, the player company, as it was called back then, mm-hmm. or First Light.
Back then it was First Light. Now it's
And so, we're going to go. And I remember the first week we were there, we both got our paycheck of $80. Wow. And we were like, this is it. We've made it.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. We walked to the car in complete silence and got in the car and was like,
we got to cash this.
I can't believe we got paid. They're going to change their mind, you know? So funny.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
In Virginia, too, those jobs went a long way. The rent in Virginia is pretty cheap later, I guess a year later, we joined the resident company as equity actors, and the $80 went up quite significantly, I don't know, we were comfortable there for about 5 years.
It's a really wonderful company there.
That's what I hear.
It's so amazing. Well, Wendy Mitchell's there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she actually came out to do a show, because I was doing a show, and they had somebody drop out, and they needed a dancer to come in, and I called her, and she said, I just don't know if I can come, and she called me back 5 minutes later, and she's like, I don't know why I'm saying no. Of course I'm going to come. So she came and met a dear friend of mine and Will's, Nick. And they, you know, fell in love and got married and now have two children and both live in Virginia and work at the theater. Yeah.
Wow.
It's awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And actually, John Hardy is kind of the guy who brought us out there. He was the head of the
Player Company.
The First Light Company order. And he's a Texas Tech grad as well.
Oh, okay.
We didn't know him at Tech. He, I guess he was there a couple of years before we got there.
And he got his PhD there.
He got his PhD there. So it's kind of a, hey, you know, Tech, Virginia highway, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Not mass droves of people, but, you know, there is
it's definitely just a small world.
Yeah.
Such a small world. But so we were in Virginia for 5 years, and then Will got this bright idea that he wanted to go to film school. So I guess he followed me to Virginia, and then I followed him to film school. And then when you graduate from film school, then this is where you come, is Los Angeles.
It is where you come.
It is part of the plan.
You've got LA, you've got Austin.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Where did you go to film school?
I went to Florida State.
Okay.
In Tallahassee.
Tallahassee.
That was awesome. Yeah. It was great. It's the quality of that school is as good, in my opinion, as USC, UCLA,
for sure.
NYU. But there is some sort of in-state tuition type arrangement that they have with like 5 or 6 different states in the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And since we were living in Virginia, I got in-state tuition in Florida.
Fantastic.
So I'm in debt, but not as in debt as I would be.
That's right.
Fantastic. So how long were you guys in Florida then?
2 years. It was a two-year
program.
Very quick program.
Fantastic.
Yeah, nonstop, no sleep, pretty much 365. You know, you're just going, learning as much as possible. And I went in as green as you can get. I had a video camera, and I'd shot some little stupid movies here and there. But when I applied, basically, I was put on the waiting list. I didn't get accepted right off the bat because I was a little riskier because I didn't have any knowledge, any background in film whatsoever. But I came in through the theater side. You know what I mean? I'd been acting, and I'd done some stage combat direction and stuff like that. And I had done a little bit of directing on stage. But they saw something, and okay, well, this, you know, he's going to bring the theater side into the film school, and we'll see what that does. And it was a welcome element. You know, it really helped me. As far as being a film director, everything I know has a foundation from theater.
That's great. Yeah. Speaking of that, of taking what you know, this foundation of theater, and then transferring it to a different medium of film, you know, how do you make that transition? What skills are you actually using from your theater training?
Well, I mean, you know, when you go to the theater, you sit and you look straight ahead, and there's a proscenium and there's stuff going on. Same thing with film. You just move that proscenium wherever you want it to be. And you kind of have to look at it through that viewpoint. And also, the proscenium is this close to you. You know, it can be inches away from your face. So it restricts you from going too big, too. You know what I mean? It's more intimate. But all of the foundations that you get from, you know, acting training and stuff like that, of like how to make a moment real and how to react to someone talking to you and how to dig into a character and make choices and all of that stuff, it's the exact same language. You
right.
know? But it just, that proscenium arch is constantly moving.
Right. It's an adjustable.
Yeah.
An adjustable proscenium arch.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. You guys work together a lot. As writer, director, producer, etc., performer. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you work together easily? Do you have any sort of conflict when you work together?
Oh, we work very well together. We prefer that by far.
Really?
Yeah. When we were at the Barter, we were both actors and working together and on tour. I mean, our first year of marriage, we were on tour in a van with like 4 other people and us every day. And it was awesome. We work really well together. We found out then that we work really well together. Then when we moved out here, there was a good section of time where we didn't work together because I hadn't yet moved into the film world at all. And Will was directing films and things. And so only really recently have we started a production company, and we now work together every day, all the time. And I feel like we work best that way. We have skills that, you know, we each bring our certain skill sets to the table, and we can work together that way. We've written several scripts together. We have different clients that we work with and produce film projects for them now. So we're constantly talking about projects. We're constantly talking about script ideas. We're constantly talking about what location, what cast, what are we doing here? You know, so I think it works really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Within your production company, do you have like, you know, sort of a breakdown of responsibilities, or do you just kind of merge?
Yeah. I mean,
across the,
we know what needs to get done. And if I'm focusing on something, she's focusing on the other, you know what I mean? But for the most part, she handles the producing. She makes sure, you know, the location's taken care of, that the cast knows what's going on, that the call sheets are there, and all that kind of stuff. The food, whatever right. needs to happen, she takes care of that. And I take care of, you know, the shot design, kind of the creative look of it, and then we collaborate on what the creative look's going to be. And then on the day of, she takes care of everything behind the scenes, and I take care of everything behind the camera, for the most part.
Yes.
Right.
And then there's times when we say, hey, I need your opinion. What
right.
do you think?
Right.
Or, you know, hey, Kat, come look at the shot. You know, whatever. We kind of work together in that way, too. But mm-hmm. And then Will does the editing. And if we do an interview or something, often I'll transcribe it or we'll talk about the story beforehand. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's worked really well for us.
And then Kat's always the fixer, too.
I'm the fixer?
Yeah, the fixer. As in, like... The final product is never a final product until she steps in and makes it better.
And I say, you need to just change this here.
Right. So she's, and that goes with scripts, too. The way we write scripts together is...
that sort of like the final eye, come in like, no,
sometimes that doesn't quite say what we want to say yet. Right. Let's try this, you know, or
right.
whatever.
Give it a little tweak here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the way we write scripts as well. And sometimes I was the fixer on the scripts. Like, she would take a first draft and then hand it to me. And I'd fix it, or vice versa. So that I think she has strengths where I have weaknesses, and vice versa as well.
Right.
And so it makes a pretty good team, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Yeah. See, this way I feel Carmen and I, you know, we've got different skill sets that
complement.
Yes, that complement. She laughs you know, at the mention of skill sets and me. I think.
Say words.
But yeah, you know, I'm much more the artistic, free thinking, touchy feely actor crap kind of guy, and you know,
that's my trademark phrase, by the way.
And Carmen is the no nonsense business, gonna come in and kick things until they fall into line.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, if it's not for those, the organizational people, the creative people can't be free to be creative.
That's so true.
Yeah. And that's just kind of the bottom line, which is why, and I'm completely OCD, and and my mother jokes that I left the womb much more organized than I found it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I've just
need to
always,
have one of those children.
I've just always been that way. I've always, fun for me when I was little was organizing the house.
That is awesome.
The bathroom drawers, the kitchen drawers, the junk drawers,
wow.
The office by the closets.
Uh-huh. I do sort of find that fun, too, sometimes.
That was me. That was fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I finally became a production manager. I've always been the non-performance anything.
Do you find, as being married creatives, that and that's a term that I like.
I like that.
Creatives.
Uh-huh.
That you support each other in ways that somebody that's not part of the business would be able to? Is that too hard of a question?
No, I mean, sometimes I look at couples who, you know, the wife is an actor and the husband is an accountant,
right.
And I'm jealous, you know what I mean? Because they have some stability where we don't have stability.
Right.
You mean financially?
Financially, if nothing
yeah.
right. Yeah, no, we're stable in other areas.
Yeah, I was like,
we're falling apart.
About
we're
yeah.
falling apart.
Chuck, turn the mic off.
Yeah. Cut this part.
No, but they have financial stability. They have job security. Whereas, you know, people, the creatives, do not necessarily have that job security. But we both know, I guess, what the light at the end of the tunnel is for
right.
each other, and we understand the struggles and why it's worth struggling to get there.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we have the same vocabulary too.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So it makes talking easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so too. Yeah. And I mean, we have the added dynamic, too, of children. Right. So that's always interesting as
and
well.
And they're in the business, too.
They yeah, are, exactly. actually. Yeah. And not on purpose, really. Like, in theory, I don't want my children to be actors or anything like that. Or I want them to have solid jobs. But yet, that's what we do. So we're right. always, like, doing family projects together, like commercials. We're like, hey, let's shoot a commercial for the Girl Scout cookies. Okay. So the kids, you know, we get the kids together. And, like, Lily's learning to use the camera. She was, like, using the slider. Aww. And they were both the actors and everything. And, you know, Lily made a movie recently because she wanted mm-hmm. to make one. So we helped her make a movie, and she had her friends in it.
That's
fantastic. And so, you know.
Yeah, my goal is by the time Lily's 12, she's going to get all of our stuff.
Yeah, she's going to be the editor.
Just, yeah, have your built-in editor in-house.
That'd be
yeah.
great. I'll yeah. be on the couch. Thanks, honey.
any way to save money.
Right, exactly, totally.
I think that's absolutely best, though, because being someone who's now been in an been faculty or staff or some combination of both at three different colleges mm-hmm. now, I see the lack of support in so many of my students mm. from their families.
Really?
Because their families want them to do something that is stable, that they know they're going to get a steady mm-hmm. paycheck mm-hmm. from. And it doesn't matter how much you tell them till they're blue in, you're blue in the face that, like, look, you can make a living doing this. Mm-hmm. I know tons of people that do it every mm-hmm. single day.
It's not easy.
Mm-mm. No, it's not easy, and I never tell my students it's easy. In fact, I'm constantly telling them, guys, you have to want this with everything in you, yeah. or
there can't be anything else that you could possibly yeah. love doing. You
yeah.
know,
yeah, because if there isn't something else that you possibly love doing, then go do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I do constantly see, especially when we lived in Florida, in Panama City, I had tons of students that their parents did not want them majoring in theater.
Mm-hmm.
Tons. And I have a lot of students here, shockingly.
That is interesting.
In at University of California that they don't want their, you know, I have so many talented students that I want to do things with that their parents are making them be political science majors or math major, just, you know, something that
what was it like when
makes
you guys
sense.
Were going into school? How are your families about the whole acting thing?
You know, my mom was pretty laid back about it and very, very supportive. So, you know, surprisingly.
And where are you from again? Sorry.
Well, so I grew up in New Mexico, but she lives in Virginia now. Okay. So, and moved back to be with her family, you know, mm-hmm. and my dad passed away when I was young. So he, when I was 13. So it was just her and I, and she moved back to be with her family when I went to school, and she was extremely supportive. And Will's family too. Will's brother's mm-hmm. even in the business.
Yeah. For the most part, they were. I mean, they highly encouraged that I get a double major,
mm-hmm.
and I did. I got a double major in theater and in mass communications.
Right.
In retrospect, I kind of wish that I would have gotten my double major in theater and in business, because this is the theater business.
Yes.
It is the film business.
Nice.
And
yeah.
there was a lot of stuff that I, you know, a huge learning curve that I had to find my way through in order to make a living in this. You know what I mean? Make yeah. a decent living in this.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, because that is something that I'm extremely interested in, is sort of the wide gap of knowledge mm-hmm. that is missing sometimes in our education, especially in the creative arts. What was sort of the biggest surprise, eye-opening surprise, going out into the real world from getting a degree? And you're like, oh, wait, I'm not prepared for this at all.
I think for our first 5 years after getting our theater degrees and all that, not too many surprises. You know, life surprises. We had to learn how to budget our personal finances. We had to
live together.
I had to learn how to iron, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Being an adult.
We had a pretty stable job, which is unheard of in acting. But
we were consistently working actors for 5 years. Most people...
In theater.
Most people just getting their degree, walking out, going to auditions mm-hmm. and stuff like that, they're going to have to figure out a way to pay the rent while they're trying to start their career.
Right.
And I mean, I know a lot of very talented actors and designers that are no longer doing theater because of those first 5 years.
Absolutely.
Because they had to figure out something and they got stuck in that something. And they, I imagine they enjoy that something because they're still doing it.
Right.
But their dream of let's go do theater, it's no longer there. So I think that And I think that the classes were there. I just don't think I paid attention to them because they're not as fun as the ones where you roll around on the floor and explore your emotions and stuff.
Right.
But the classes of how to manage that career, how to find that audition or find that theater company or how to market yourself.
Right.
I think there can be some more emphasis on that.
Well, and I actually think Texas Tech does a better job of that than a lot of the other places that I've been, because Texas Tech actually does have a degree in theater management, which when I got there, it was new when I got there.
Well, maybe it was there and we didn't know, but still.
No, that
it's
was
a master's
it was
program.
It was a new program under Doc Donahue.
Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. Good. Right.
I think it was just starting.
It was just starting when we left.
You can actually get your master's in theater
Deborah
management.
Martin, I think, was one of the
first.
But even for actors, because I thought you took it and maybe you didn't take it, but there was a class on.
There was an auditioning class.
There was something else.
Career.
It was actually about like building your resume and the way to make yourself look a certain way and have a certain presence and what kinds of things to look for when you get out there. And I don't know.
Yeah, I took a class from Dr. Donahue.
MFA,
yeah.
So I was not taking that class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just took whatever Fred told me to take. That was my life at Texas Tech.
There you go.
Fred, what do I do? Yeah. Take this.
Yeah. Because no. Even if you went in with ideas of what you wanted to take, Fred would say, no, you're taking this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. And now he's on a boat, right?
And now he's living on a boat in the Caribbean.
I know, right?
So
what more could you ask for, really?
The man has done something right.
Yeah.
He keeps telling me I need to visit him on the boat.
You should.
I know, oh my God. I know.
Can I go?
I will tell him. I said, can you swing through like the Panama Canal and come back up to California?
Mm-hmm.
Which load the boat.
Yeah.
with former
people.
Texas Tech people.
Party!
Just load the boat.
Yeah.
And on the film side of things, it was the same kind of scenario. I love the education that I got at Florida State, and they do prepare you in some ways of like, this is what's going to happen when you go out there. But I honestly think they need to have a class in how to sell a car, because the way this business works, if you can sell a car, you can sell a script.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sell a car. You know what I mean? It's that's not part of my, that's not who I am. I'm not a salesman,
right?
Necessarily. I've learned to become a salesman.
Yeah.
But I really think probably right after film school, if I would have gone and worked at a used car lot, I'd be a lot more successful than I am right now.
I think that's really interesting. And why are we not teaching these classes?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, you know, hey, we are in a unique position to be stalwarts for the future.
I got a lot of that stuff, but
is that thinking too high-handedly?
I don't know that I really got it in class, or if it was just constantly my design professor saying you have to sell yourself because you're not going to sell somebody on a pretty picture that you've spent how many hours rendering or a pretty model. You have to sell you.
Yeah. There is a lot, I think, of that being able to present yourself in a certain way that that should be taught from a business standpoint of theater, film. Whether you're acting, directing, design, whatever, so that you can stand in front of a group of people and discuss your ideas clearly.
Sure.
One
of the things that we learned a lot, I felt I grew so much as a producer. We have a screenplay that we're seeking financing for right now, and we created a business plan, and that was awesome. I'm super proud of it. And then when we went to start pitching it, we practiced that pitch and understood all the numbers, and I got to see it from a whole nother side. And that I learned so much from that, and we haven't had a no yet. So I mean, I feel like it's a really good project, good solid project, and we've successfully been able to champion it, so to speak. You know, we haven't had a yes yet either, but we also haven't had a no.
Haven't had a no.
That's important.
I feel like in this business, that's positive.
I also think, I mean, like in the university setting, it would be great to have a little bit more, but a lot of this is school of hard knocks too.
True.
And I do think that like I did a reality show a few years back, and the first challenge we had on that reality show, it was for directors where you compete to whatever.
And we watched it.
Yeah, we watched it.
Yeah,
we were fans.
We watched it everywhere.
Thank you very much. The first challenge was pitching. You had to pitch. You had 3 minutes to pitch a feature idea to some judges. That was the second time in my life that I pitched. In my life. The first time was for thesis at Florida State. I pitched for my thesis film, and then I pitched in front of America. It was like, good Lord.
I think your acting background served you well.
It did. I faked it as well as I could, and, and it worked. I think that anybody who is going into the film industry, pitch every day. You know, pitch to some, pitch to your neighbor, pitch to your dog. It does not matter.
Practice.
Create a story, and even if it's a bad story, pitch it and see if you can sell that bad story to your dog. You know, just practice. And then on the theater side, or actor side, I guess, audition every day. You know what I mean? Audition. What doesn't matter if you're auditioning the back of a cereal box. Audition it. You know what I mean? Just practice that monologue and try to find a way emotionally to get into those cornflakes or whatever you're doing. But that... that is the sales. You know what I mean? That, that you're the car that you're trying to sell.
Yeah.
Learn how to sell yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my advice.
Absolutely. I think there's also something to be said too for creating. You know how people will say, nobody else is going to do it for you. I guess that's not really what I'm looking for, but just make something, be creative, because a lot of the time people come out here and they're waiting. They're waiting for that thing. They're waiting for that audition or that production job or that, whatever it is. And, what's awesome about our theater company too, Actors Co-op, is that, if you have a play that you want to produce, we've got like two or three slots in the summertime where you can come in. It's a much smaller budget, but you can produce a play and you can be creative. And, you know, they've done new works before, they've done Shakespeare, they've done, a little more racy stuff. We can do a little more racy stuff than we do on our main stage. And so, you know, it's just a really, just don't wait for somebody else sometimes. Sometimes, like for us, we were like, let's make a commercial today. Okay. I mean, nobody's ever going to see that. It's not going to make us any money. But at the same time, we're being creative and we're learning and our kids are learning and we're, you know, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's one of the most important things is to get out of the idea of somebody else is going to make it and then they're going to come and hire me for it.
Right.
Instead of doing what you're saying and say, make something.
Mm-hmm.
Just go make something right now. It doesn't have to be the best thing that's ever been made, but you're making something, and that's, you're using your skills, you're using your creativity, and you're not sitting and waiting for magic to happen.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that I always try to tell my kids, is that nobody, unless you've already made it, nobody headhunts in this business.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody calls you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody looks at a stack of resumes and your headshot happens to be one that you dropped off with an agent, and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah, right.
That does not happen.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally! Yes,
this
exactly.
This is the 5 foot 8 brunette that I've been looking
right,
for.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. You have, and I try to tell people that constantly too. If you're an actor, then audition constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way to get better at it. I think one of the things that we don't do for actors that I did get more of, because I was design, production, stage management, I was all that kind of, we were taught a lot about how you go in and you present yourself and how you go in and how you talk about an idea and what you should say and what you shouldn't say and certain buzzwords and things that can help and that kind of
that'd be helpful to have.
I got taught that a lot actually, mm-hmm. but I think actors don't, because they do get it's so much emphasis on the performance,
mm-hmm.
that 60 seconds of monologue, that you forget about that 20 seconds of slating beforehand,
mm-hmm.
where you're supposed to just be you. And they tell you, hey, you're you for 10 seconds,
mm-hmm.
when you say your name and your number, and then but then how do you be you if nobody's really taught you?
Yeah.
I actually always found
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually always found that the slate was actually a much more important part of the audition process than the monologue itself.
Yeah.
That first 5 seconds of introducing yourself says more to the casting people than what you're going to do in the next 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. True.
There's so much, I mean, I think there's so much communicated in just how you present yourself. As you, not as a character, but yeah. As you.
When mm-hmm. when we first came out here, I was doing commercial acting and stuff like that too, and I I would book the ones where I was completely hungover or exhausted, and the ones where I was desperate for yes. the job, never,
mm-hmm.
never would have. Mm-hmm. But I'd walk in and I'd be like, I just want to go home. Okay, hey, my name's Will. How's it going? Let's do this thing. We do it. And I'd book that. It's like, all right. So maybe just be natural and just
yeah.
get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It does seem to be that like it's always when you've given up and you don't care about the job, yeah. that's when you get the job.
Or
yeah.
when you buy tickets for Disneyland.
That happens every time.
It's like, all right, you booked it.
Why no?
We're finally going. Just spend
$5,000. That has happened like 3 times. Yeah. That's ridiculous. What is that?
But if we're desperate for jobs,
we go to Disneyland.
If you're desperate for jobs, buy some tickets for Disneyland.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. So, yeah, that's happened.
So at this point, what would you want to do? Like, if you had sort of carte blanche to do whatever project you wanted to do, Kat, what would you want to do?
Well, our screenplay that we're pitching, I want to get the money for that and make that. I mean, I love what we're doing now. I love creating these projects that we've been creating. They're especially the ones for one of our clients in particular. They're very creative outlets, which is awesome. We do a lot of interviews too, which are not as creative, but also fun telling that story. I love that. But I'd love to move to the next level and have our, you know, be able to produce our screenplay and have Will be able to direct that. So that would be our goal in the next 5 years.
Is that anything you want to talk about right now, or is it too early?
I don't know. Right now it's in the hands of an investor, so it may be a little too early. Hopefully we can talk about it next week.
Yes.
In detail. Well, let's
keep our fingers crossed. You never know.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
No, but it's a very, very personal project that we've been working on for 10 years.
Wow.
And actually, I wrote the first draft, a very, very bad draft, when I was at Texas Tech.
Oh, wow.
Then
it was
set
the
on
play
a,
version.
The play version. And then it sat on a shelf for, you know, many years, and then it became a film version, and it's been tweaked. And every project that we do, we grow, you know?
Yeah.
And so occasionally we'll go back to it, and we'll put those years of experience into
that
script.
Is this a feature-length script?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put those years of experience into the script, and it gets better, and it gets better. And now it's at that sweet spot where it needs to be made. The fruit is ripe, it's ready to be made.
And it will. I really have no doubt it will be made. So in the next 5 years, I think it will be. And Will actually just directed a movie. We didn't produce it or anything, but he directed a movie that just came out on video on demand a couple days ago. So that was exciting.
The A-List.
The A-List. Yeah.
So that's out now on
it is. It's available.
VOD?
It is. Mm-hmm. iTunes, Amazon, Hulu, and all the
fantastic
stuff. Yeah.
Excellent. So
awesome.
We'll put a link up on the website to that as well.
Great.
So that people can see that and buy it and
mm-hmm.
Maybe get a few shekels in your pockets.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
You
know?
Maybe.
We didn't produce it, so, but you know, yeah. Still.
We got to make a lot of shekels in order to
get it. But that's okay. But still.
Well,
but it's a good movie. Will did a very good job directing it.
And that was an interesting experience because I was brought in for a meeting on that, and a month and a half later, we were shooting it.
Wow.
Which doesn't happen very often in this town.
But yet sometimes it does, you know?
Yeah.
You find that something comes up and then you're moving at Daphne.
Our dog is barking.
That's the dog.
But that was it was an interesting experiment. I'll say that because I didn't write the script. I give about 2 rounds of notes on it. And then we were shooting that thing. So really, I guess where I watch the movie and I feel the most pride is in the visual look of it, because that's where I had the most influence and most control.
Yeah.
And it's a teen comedy, but I was able to shift it into a world that's a little bit more heightened. And so visually, we're able to take it in interesting directions. So.
Cool.
Yeah, he did a good job visually. It looks lovely. It looks really good. We had a great DP and...
Awesome.
And it was fun to go to Portland. I got to go to Portland and hang out on set with him for a little while. It was fun.
Fantastic.
And eat lots of good food. Man.
Yeah,
Portland's
the
awesome.
Best.
Mm. Yeah, we've never been. Can't wait.
Oh my gosh, you'd love it.
You've been to Portland?
Gail got married in Portland. That's the only time my best friend Gail.
Uh-huh.
She got married in Portland, so I was there for a weekend. But I pretty much just saw the airport and the hotel and the chapel and the hotel and the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Because... And I was at Texas Tech, but this was before we started dating.
Yeah,
we'll go up there. It's not too.
We
far.
Knew each other, but we weren't dating yet.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I had gone up there, but that's the only time I've ever been to Portland. So, don't be jealous.
It's like, why didn't you take me?
I mean, it was a very beautiful drive from the hotel to the chapel. I remember that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise...
How long have you guys been married?
It was 11 years this past March.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is awesome.
So we've been together since September 13th, 2001.
Yep. Wow.
Yep.
And then we got married in March of 2004.
Oh, cool. We got married in 1997, December 1997.
When did you graduate?
98. So May of 1998. So we had a semester where we were married at Tech, and then we left. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I couldn't remember the timeline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was a long time ago.
Yes. Right.
Well, see, and I didn't get there until 2000.
Yeah.
Fall of 2000. Yeah.
Yeah, I got there in the fall of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Me and Ryan Barb were sort of the overlap between the between your class and the much later class. We were sort of the 7-year bridge.
Well, and that's basically how I met Chuck, was because I got to be good friends with Barbie.
Oh, really?
Was he still there? He hasn't graduated yet, right?
He's on the 24-year
plan. No, he was gone, but he was hanging out. And so I met him through Ryan Hart.
Oh, me? Yeah.
Well, I met you through, you just showed up in the shop one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was taking a semester off, and so I just, went to hang out in the scene shop like you do on a day off.
Well, see, that's it. He left, and I came in, and he was gone. And I happened to become friends with all the people he was friends with, not even knowing he existed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back.
I came back into town and was like, hey, everybody. Hey, who's this?
Yeah, who's this?
And then, well, ours was kind of, it took us a little while because... My roommate, who was an undergrad student there, my college roommate, we shared an apartment. She had a crush on Chuck.
Oh.
And so the day Chuck and I met, Chuck does not know how to flirt.
Mm.
So it became very obvious very quickly that he was interested because he didn't know to be like sly about it.
Oh, how funny.
I don't know. I thought I was pretty sly.
You did, yeah.
You just tackled her or something?
That was
pretty much.
Okay. Yeah.
We're having a party that night at Reinhardt's house, Chinese New Year for Jawa. And he just kept going, are you going? So you're going to go.
You going?
So you're going to go tonight, so I'll see you tonight.
That is so cute.
I kept doing that. And then later on, I was with my roommate, and she goes, I heard Chuck was in town. I said, oh, yeah, I met him earlier today. And she's like,
oh my gosh.
And so my friend
funny.
Just went, okay, then we're not going there because Stephanie likes him. So, and it's girl code.
Right.
We didn't get together for a long time and he didn't understand. He was like, Steph, I don't like Stephanie.
Oh, yeah, so right.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if you don't like Stephanie.
Right.
I live with Stephanie.
That is so funny.
So we didn't start dating for 8 or 9 months, I think, after we met.
Did you guys know, who's the one who has a theater company in New Mexico now?
Amelia,
yes.
Yeah, so she started a equity theater company in Albuquerque.
She was
actually
at the Barter as well.
And she was at the Barter.
Wow. Amelia,
Amelia Ampuero.
Exactly. Yeah. So she may be one to talk to too, because she started a theater company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And that's not too far. So
That's
probably within
take a road
my
trip.
Non-existent travel budget.
Right, yeah. Well, you can go to New Mexico, go skiing, and
you've been to Vegas already for this thing.
It's true.
Yeah.
Come on,
just keep going.
Budget,
so. Well, it's actually, Albuquerque is not that far from Lubbock, so you go visit Lubbock.
There you go. My dad is actually still in Lubbock.
Really? There you go.
Billy still lives in
Billy
will never leave.
Really?
Lubbock.
It's my one tie to West Texas now. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Texas Tech, they're having that reunion.
Well,
at Texas Tech?
Yeah, it's happening this summer.
It's the summer, and it's the theater and dance department reunion. It's it's going over like 15 years of classes or something.
Did I know about
this? Yeah, we got an email about it.
End of July, I think.
Something like that.
And I think we looked at it, but we just can't afford to travel. Especially with the two of us having time off at the same time.
Can't get time off at the same time. It's pretty close to impossible.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's pretty close. My mom is actually going to try to come visit us in September.
That's nice.
She's going to try to come out here because the two of us trying to get time at the same time.
Yeah.
He told me, he's like, I'm taking vacation in June. I was like, okay.
Great, yeah.
Like,
have fun.
He's got to take vacation time, you know, or he'll lose it.
Yeah, so you better take it.
Like,
yeah,
so he's got to take it. He's so like,
my vacation is going to be the best staycation of all.
Yeah, you're going to be like,
he said, I'm not saying we're going anywhere. And I said, well, that's good
because I can't.
We're not going anywhere. Yeah,
that's so funny.
I plan to record lots of podcasts during
vacation. Yeah, right.
He's going to stock up.
Yeah, totally.
I'll just travel around and record a bunch of podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, guys, we're actually reaching the end of our hour.
Awesome.
So thank you so much again for... this is a two-for-one.
Yeah, it was fun.
I love it. So before I cut you guys loose, since we do have a twofer, I'm going to actually ask this from both of you. I like to close with some words of wisdom. So for people out there that are either coming into the business or maybe hitting a little bit of resistance and they need a little bit of positivity.
My advice would be you can't ever give up, because if you give up, then you lose. And there are some times where you feel like it's dark and you don't see the future and you have to keep creating. You just have to keep creating.
Mine's going to get a little more complicated, but I think there's an equation, and at the right side of that equal sign is your goal. And you either fit in that equation or you don't fit in that equation. If you want to have that equal sign equal your goal, then either change yourself or change the equation. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I think you should. I don't know. Does it make sense?
It doesn't make sense to you? Basically,
give us an example.
If you desire to be an actor and you are a certain type, just make sure that is the equation that's on the left of that equal sign. You know what I mean? Don't try to fit your square peg in a round hole. Don't try to be the 50-year-old man if you're a 15-year-old girl. Know who you are and play to those strengths. If you want to be that 50-year-old man, make some changes. You know what I mean? Change that equation.
Become a 50-year-old man.
That's right. That's a little hard to do, but basically, whatever your goal is, you either need to change what that goal is according to who you are, or change who you are in order to get that.
So you're saying know thyself.
Know thyself, and to thine own self be true.
Don't try to
thine own self be a 50-year-old man.
Not. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks. This was fun.
This is your curtain call, so take a bow.
Yay.
Thank you.
Hello there, folks. This is Chuck Clay, your host of Curtain Call Podcast. I just wanted to take a quick second to say thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed that podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it, please take the time to give us a listener review. Here at Curtain Call Podcast, we want your feedback. So please, guys, gals, take a few seconds when you get done with the podcast and go to iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, or whatever fine purveyor of podcasts you use, and please give us a listener rating or review. Trust me, it goes a long ways in getting us new listeners and new eyeballs, and that's always a good thing in the land of Curtain Call Podcast. Also, folks, if you enjoy what you hear on Curtain Call Podcast every month, please visit us at curtaincallpodcast.com, where you can explore all things Curtain Call Podcast, including listening to past episodes. You can leave us a comment or a suggestion, or you can connect with us on social media. On Facebook, we are Curtain Call Podcast, and on the tweets, we are at Curtain Call Pod. More than anything else, if you enjoy Curtain Call Podcast, please share us with your friends, your family, your colleagues, your coworkers. Find us, friend us, share us. And finally, here at the podcast, we have nothing to talk about if we don't get out and do it. So please, go out, see, do, live some theater. Thanks. Have a great month. And remember, folks, when you find people who not only tolerate your quirks, but celebrate them with glad cries of, "Me too!" be sure to cherish those people because those weirdos are your tribe. Till next time, tribe. That's all for Curtain Call Podcast.